A warning, this episode contains mention of sexual misconduct. It's 1:13 a.m. and we are looking back on this year's Grammy Awards. It was a big night for Jon Batiste, Silk Sonic, Olivia Rodrigo, and more. I'm Stephen Thompson and we are recapping the 2022 Grammy Awards on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me is NPR Culture Desk correspondent Anastasia Tsiolkas. Hi, Anastasia.
Hey, Stephen.
It is a pleasure to have you. So going into tonight's Grammys, many, myself included, predicted a massive night, possibly even a sweep for Olivia Rodrigo. But she didn't win in three of the night's four biggest categories. Still, she did win Best New Artist, Best Pop Solo Performance, and Best Pop Vocal Album. And she gave a great performance of Driver's License. Sidewalks, we cross, I still hear your voice in the trap. Yeah, so I think a lot of people expected kind of a coronation for Olivia Rodrigo tonight, and I think she got that, but only to a point.
Well, if there's a coronation, Stephen, I thought it was her performance on stage. She is just so ready for megastardom, and I think she just showed that off so amply tonight.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Even though, like we said, she didn't necessarily have a huge awards night like she might have, she definitely represented herself enormously well. Now, two of the big awards that Olivia Rodrigo was kind of expected to win but didn't, both went to Silk Sonic. Now, the Grammys seem to love Bruno Mars. They have always seemed to love Bruno Mars. Silk Sonic is Bruno Mars' duo with Anderson .Paak. Silk Sonic won Record of the Year for Leave the Door Open. They also won Song of the Year and Best R&B Song. And they tied for Best R&B Performance with Jasmine Sullivan. Anastasia, I really, really feel like I should have seen those big wins coming.
I mean, really, Silk Sonic, speaking of the anointed ones, they definitely feel like the Academy loves them. And the Academy loves a lot of mainstream artists. You know, keep in mind, both Record of the Year and Song of the Year are categories that are voted on by all the Grammy voters, no matter what their specialties are. So big, affable acts are very likely to win.
Yeah, and this is Bruno Mars' third time winning Record of the Year. That does not happen very often. Silk Sonic, we should note, kicked off the night with a performance of 777. Very appropriate for the first ever Grammy Awards to take place in Las Vegas. Now, I have to confess here, I really, really thought that Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga were going to win Album of the Year for Love for Sale. I feel like this would have been the most Grammys move ever, to be in the process of trying to win over the young people, giving Album of the Year to a 95-year-old artist. Alas, it did not happen.
Not only a 95-year-old artist, but a duo singing songs written between 80 and 90 years ago, which, you know, I had all these tweets pre-written about how this material was definitely reflecting the voice of the kids today. But we didn't have that happen. You and I were both foiled in our expectations.
What the Grammys did do this year was give Album of the Year to Jon Batiste for We Are. Batiste won five times out of a whopping 11 nominations. He had been nominated not only in the general fields for Album and Record of the Year, but also for awards in R&B, jazz, contemporary, classical, and more. In addition to Album of the Year, he won Best American Roots Performance, Best American Roots Song, Best Music Video for Freedom, and he tied for Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media for his work in Soul. Anastasia, this was a very, very big night for Jon Batiste.
It sure was, and I can't think of any other artist in history that has been nominated for R&B and jazz and classical, in, you know, across those three genres.
In one year.
In one year. Exactly, right? Not just overall, but in 1 year. So he's clearly emerged as a huge Grammy favorite. I think now for the next 20 years of telecasts, we're going to see him come out and serve the grand man of the Grammys. And it's just one of those things that, again, like, he won the big award. You know, Album of the Year is a huge thing. And for him to win that, you can say, okay, well, this year, and again, this is getting in sort of inside baseball stuff. So most recently in the big four categories, that's Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Album of the Year, and Best New Artist. Just a few months ago, they said, no, we're going to do 10 nominees for each of those categories. So I think that there's a real chance that votes were split because there were just so many nominees in each of those categories. And here we go.
Yeah, and I think that win at the end of the show for John Batiste really was set up nicely by John Batiste's performance. You couldn't really be mad at John Batiste winning Album of the Year when you saw just how dynamic and charismatic and charming he is as a live performer. I move my body just like this. I don't know why, but I feel like
totally accomplished in sort of everything he touches, literally, right? I mean, he's sort of dashing to the piano and hopping up and running around in a set that looks like the movie Soul and then running back to the piano. And there was just a lot going on. And he didn't just navigate it, he controlled it in a way that was incredibly impressive.
Well, one thing that we talk about every year when we talk about the Grammys is that the Grammys have a tendency to not only hand out awards, but to anoint industry ambassadors. And so what often winds up happening is they'll kind of put all their chips on one jazz musician, one rock musician, one country musician, and then they'll kind of lavish awards on them year after year. And so one thing you saw pop up several times tonight, if there was a country award to be handed out and Chris Stapleton was nominated for it, Chris Stapleton was going to win it. Chris Stapleton ended up winning Best Country Solo Performance, Best Country Song, Best Country Album. In the rock category, Foo Fighters ended up winning Best Rock Performance, Best Rock Song, Best Rock Album. So you see John Batiste falling into that category as well of, like, John Batiste is now a Grammy-anointed favorite. And as you mentioned, John Batiste is going to keep winning Grammys over and over again. Now, I mentioned Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters' absence really loomed large over this telecast. Drummer Taylor Hawkins died on March 25th. Foo Fighters were scheduled to perform, but that was, of course, scrapped. But there were still tributes to him.
Totally. And, you know, we even saw Billie Eilish wearing a Taylor Hawkins t-shirt during her performance, right? The other thing, if I can say this about these so-called niche categories or the genre categories is...
I love how rock is a niche category now.
Yeah, right. Listen, in 2022, it kind of is. But the voters for all those categories are self-selecting, right? So I'm a former Grammy voter and a former Grammy judge myself before I came to NPR. And one of the things is that you tell the Grammys in your votes what you feel your categories of specialty are. And they're sort of relying on you to report that correctly. So people, if they have a favorite in a certain category that they really want to vote for, it is totally possible to sort of put all your votes towards that, and you sort of, that's how sweeps become more possible.
You mentioned some of the sort of niche categories. I think that is where several true pleasures came up over the course of the evening. There were a few enormously satisfying wins that I was really happy to see. Anastasia, do you want to name a couple of yours?
Yeah, Jasmine Sullivan.
Yes.
She finally won her first two this evening. That was pretty amazing and very long overdue. From my point of view,
I mean, Jasmine Sullivan, I jumped off the couch and pumped my fist like the Packers had just won the Super Bowl. I was so excited. Hotels is one of my very, very favorite albums of 2021. That record is phenomenal. It's wild that she had never won a Grammy before. I was very, very, very happy about that. She tied for Best R&B Performance with Silk Sonic and then won Best R&B Album, beating, among others, John Batiste. That was a really, really great thing to see. I was very happy to see Bo Burnham win Best Song Written for Visual Media. Inside is very important to me. Lucky Day won Best Progressive R&B Album. He has been an NPR music favorite since very early in his career. And so, you know, I think we all feel a certain amount of pride in his success. So there were little happinesses strewn throughout, including Anastasia, in the category of Best Global Music Performance.
Right, where Arush Aftab won, and she's really great, and she's
so
become kind of an indie music darling in a lot of ways, and I would argue weirdly more familiar to Grammy voters than a lot of megastars, you know, who sell and stream millions and millions of tracks. She won in Best Global Music Performance, which is a brand new category. It's supposed to be for singles, not albums. And I personally think it was meant to make room for some megastars from outside of the United States and the UK, like Afrobeat superstars like Wizkid and Burna Boy, that I think it was meant to make room for their single successes. But here we are with Arush Aftab, which felt very Grammy-ish in a lot of ways. I'm very happy for her, but it still felt like the Grammy choice.
I mean, I'm here for it. If the Grammys are gonna anoint ambassadors and they decide Arush Aftab, who put out my favorite album of last year, I'm still all for it. I did appreciate the fact Arush Aftab was nominated for Best New Artist, which was a completely foregone conclusion that was going to Olivia Rodrigo. On a much more frustrating note, we are going to have to talk about the fact that Louis C.K. won Best Comedy Album. Very hard to shake that, even though that happened in kind of the pre-show, you know, a couple hours before the telecast even started. As you probably know, Louis C.K. has faced sexual misconduct allegations from multiple women. He has admitted that, quote, the stories are true. I don't want to say it was surprising, because the Grammys, Lord knows, the Grammys find a way to step on a rake every year. It managed to be not surprising and yet shocking at the same time. Really an embarrassment.
Yeah, and you know, of course, almost instantly last night, there was a bevy of hot takes saying like, oh, this is what happens in cancel culture. You come back and win a Grammy, which is kind of fair. You know, he's had multiple women, as you said, accuse him, and he's the one who garnered the prize. It's going to be a hard thing for people to come to terms with, I think.
Yeah, so the remaining winners from Sunday night's telecast included several stars who were taking home their first Grammy awards. Doja Cat won Best Pop Duo Group Performance for Kiss Me More, featuring the great SZA. The rapper Baby Keem won Best Rap Performance for a really great song called Family Ties. That's his song with Kendrick Lamar. There were also some big shutouts over the course of the night. Justin Bieber went 0 for 8, which I could kind of see coming. He's never been a huge Grammy favorite. I did not see Billie Eilish going 0 for 7, given how well she traditionally does at awards shows. I didn't see Lil Nas X going 0 for 5. I thought he'd at least win Best Video. John Batiste took that. Brandi Carlile went 0 for 5 and gave really a pretty magnificent performance in which she kind of does that thing she does on awards shows where she shows up, hits the greatest note you've ever heard in your life, and then walks home empty. Handed.
Totally. I mean, and it's funny to think that Billie Eilish and Lil Nas X and Brandi Carlile all performed, because, you know, the joke used to be, if someone was performing on the telecast, you knew they were going to win. They came and they did their thing and then they went home.
Yeah. I did want to talk a little bit more about the telecast and some of the huge array of flashy performances. I always say that the Grammys are essentially a 3.5-hour infomercial for the music industry that is really, really heavily tilted toward trying to put its best foot forward in like big, big, big performances. Anastasia, did you have highlights from the night?
Honestly, I felt like the first hour sort of bounced along in the most buoyant, happy, sort of clicking right along pace. You know, there was the opening Silk Sonic performance we talked about. We had Olivia Rodrigo really commanding the stage. There was like this whole string of performances afterwards, J Balvin and BTS. And Lil Nas X and Billie Eilish, and it all sort of went along, and it felt like this was such a strong statement, like, okay, we're back. It's been a really rough 2+ years. We're back as a community. We're here to celebrate. We're here to sort of luxuriate in good vibes. And that was awesome. That was a thing that I think the Grammys have been sorely lacking, that sort of sense of pace and buoyancy. And then maybe not so much after that.
Yeah, I thought all 6 of the performances that you mentioned were outstanding, and outstanding in different ways. I could watch BTS rock an awards show every year and be thrilled. But I thought Billie Eilish was great. But man, then you start to get into that second hour, and some of it is you just got to get into the business of being the Grammys. And so some of the performances kind of petered out a little bit more. It got a little bit more uneven. You had occasional big highlights like John Batiste that really jumped out in those last few hours, but nothing for me really met the standards of that first hour.
No, not in the sort of regular performances kind of way. Not for me, at least.
So, Anastasia, did you have thoughts on Lady Gaga rocking the Cole Porter songbook and kind of what turned out to be a little bit more of like a tribute to Tony Bennett, who was watching from home?
Come on, Daniel Fuchs. Love for sale. Appetizing young love for sale.
Love for Sale came across as weirdly frantic to me. Like, let's put on a show. We're putting on a show. And, you know, Lady Gaga clearly adores the work she's done with Tony Bennett. She clearly loves the Great American Songbook material. Like, I could totally take issue with some of her choices within how she phrases and things like that. You know, as a jazz snob, I could totally do that. But she has a sort of huge presence. It felt as though she was trying to fill the stage on behalf of both of them, which was very understandable given the circumstances, but maybe a little unnecessary because I don't think anyone was unaware of Tony Bennett's shadow.
Yeah, I mean, as you got kind of later on in the broadcast, they did kind of revert to some more kind of traditional Grammy moments where they mash different people together on stage and see if anything cool happens. They brought out her, you know, who is a huge, huge Grammy favorite. They had her kind of collaborating with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Travis Barker, and Lenny Kravitz. And at one point, it's just like, Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz is kind of banging along. And I'm like, man, this is Grammys circa 1995.
Totally.
What I really want to know is, you said, Are You Gonna Go My Way? And I got to know.
Well, they did kick off that performance and several others by having members of the artists' stage crews introduce them, kind of as a way of paying tribute to a lot of the professionals behind the scenes who make the music industry happen. How did that work for you?
Well, I just want to note they were all female professionals.
Yes.
And I am all for celebrating the immensely hardworking and talented women behind the scenes in the music industry. Having said that, the Recording Academy in recent years has had a lot of issues with how they have handled women in the industry, both as performers and creators. You know, famously a few years ago, now there was a very infamous comment that was made that if women wanted to have a place in the music industry, they needed to, quote, step up, which has led to some what seem to be not very fruitful initiatives through the Recording Academy. They have a thing called Women in the Mix that was supposed to help increase the number of female songwriters and producers and engineers in the business. And there was a study released just last week that shows very solidly that so far those attempts have gone absolutely nowhere. So unfortunately, I think that having these women come out and introduce artists was a PR move. I mean, it felt good, but it was a PR move to sort of wallpaper over the fact that the Recording Academy hasn't actually been able to make any major impressions in this area yet.
Yeah. So one thing the Grammys did over the course of the night on several occasions was upstage the Oscars from last weekend. You not only did they give Questlove an opportunity to give a speech without distractions, they made several jokes about the infamous Will Smith slap. They also gave a forum, which the Oscars were asked to and didn't, to Vladimir Zelensky, president of Ukraine, who gave a speech urging support for Ukraine in its fight against Russia.
Totally. And that was incredibly moving. He talked about musicians specifically.
Our musicians wear body armor instead of tuxedo. They sing to the wounded in hospitals, even to those who can't hear them, but the music will break through anyway. We defend our freedom to live, to love, to sound on our land.
And it was very powerful. Apparently, he recorded this message in just the past couple of days. And it was followed by a performance led by John Legend of his song Free, featuring some Ukrainian artists, two musicians, Susanna Igludan and Mika Nudin, and a poet named Luba Yakunchuk. And it was one of those moments that one wouldn't have seen coming just, you know, a couple of months ago. And it might have felt as though a weird insertion into this very lighthearted event, and, you know, that isn't prone to a lot of self-reflection or somberness, I should say. But here this year, it felt like the only path to go down.
Cage birds singing, great change so we can do our holy dance.
Хай летить у долини, злітає гори, пронизує серце землі.
Yeah, and it also, you know, over the course of the night, you also had, I thought, a very moving in memoriam segment. Stephen Sondheim died in November, and you had several great stage performers, Ben Platt, Cynthia Erivo, Leslie Odom Jr., Rachel Zegler, you know, performed, you know, in tribute to Stephen Sondheim. I thought that in memoriam in general, like, struck a really nice tone in a way that sometimes those don't. You know, I said this last year about Trevor Noah and the job that he has done hosting the Grammys. I think he's better at this than people think he is.
Yeah, and he didn't make it about him, and he didn't make it about moving through a series of, as you said, skits or setups or punchlines. Overall, I thought Trevor Noah in particular did a really fine job of moving things along and being a very gracious MC.
Yeah, I think on balance, the Grammys have, they always have their flaws, but I thought there were a ton of highlights to choose from.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really enjoyable evening overall in a way that I was happily surprised about.
Well, we want to know what you think about the Grammys. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Anastasia Tsiolkas, thanks so much for being here.
Stephen, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always great to have you. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Candace Lim and edited by Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all tomorrow.